All right. Hello, and thank you for joining us for this episode of AMA's Marketing N. This is a special live episode from New York City and the Green Space. It's AMA's first ever live recording of our podcast. I'm your host, AMA CEO, Benny F. Johnson. Tonight, we're going to explore life through a marketing lens, looking at the points of unexpected journey that happen with marketing. We're going to talk to innovators who you might not have heard of, but are exactly the ones you need to know. We have four incredible guests today. Our conversation is going to start with LaFontaine Oliver, president and CEO of New York Public Radio, and then Dean Lauzon Escoy from the Gabrielli School of Business at Fordham University, Fernando Romero, SVP of Digital Ad Sales for Televisa Univision, and last but not least, Forrest Young, Executive Director of Design for The Fundamental Company. So our first guest today is really at home. We're actually recording this in his home of New York Public Radio. LaFontaine Oliver is the new president and CEO of New York Radio, the largest public radio organization in the country, and a leading national podcast producer, an essential source for trustworthy news and classic music for New Yorkers. NYPR reaches millions of people every day across WNYC, WQXR, the WNYC Studios, and this space, the Jerome L. Green Performance Center in New Jersey Public Radio. So LaFontaine brings over 20 years of experience in both national and regional markets with public radio. He served recently two terms as the national board chair of NPR. His experience in radio and media has spanned everywhere from DC to Baltimore to Orlando and New York. LaFontaine thrives on these interconnections of media and marketing. LaFontaine, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Benny. I appreciate the offer to join you. I've been a fan of the podcast, so it's great to have the opportunity to be here with you today.
But that means a lot because you've spent a lot of time in public radio. Yes. So we're going to take you back. You know, we talk about these points of marketing and unexpected. So when you were a student at the University of Miami, mm-hmm. you were actually a marketing major.
I was, yes.
So talk a little bit about how did you enter into the major and how did that transition you into your first stint in radio at University of Miami?
Wow, so you went all the way back.
I had to go back to the genesis.
Yeah, so growing up, initially I wanted to be a performer. I was a theater kid, and so I literally grew up in performance, whether it was theater, television, a couple independent film roles. But when it was time to go off to college, I called myself doing the more practical thing, which okay. was you should get a business degree. And so I did my undergraduate studies at the University of Miami. And while I did my electives in communications, I went to the School of Business there and studied marketing because, again, in my mind, it was the practical thing to do at the time.
Right. So what got you into the radio station?
Yeah. So I actually have a rich sort of history and lineage in broadcasting. You know, my dad worked in radio and it was wonderful as a young person getting to sort of see my dad in the business. And in a lot of ways, broadcast and performance were sort of symbiotic. And and so initially, when I got to campus, I remember thinking, oh, you know what, I'm going to go check out this this campus radio station and see what this is all about. And like a lot of college radio stations at the time, it was primarily a music formatted station, alternative, that is. And so I remember going in, and this was, you know, in my eyes, sort of the heyday of radio. And so at that time, as a freshman, you couldn't just walk on campus and, you know, get a show. And so I had to wait for a time slot to open up. And I remember it being an overnight slot. So it was something.
Did the voice get deeper for the overnight time slot?
You know, you got to settle into that lower register when you're talking to folks at 2 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, so I finally got a shift on the station during overnights. And interestingly enough, I forget which named hurricane came through that year, but one of the big hurricanes came through, and I remember them asking for volunteers
okay.
to man the station during a hurricane. And at the time, I didn't really know what that entailed, but being a bright-eyed, young, hungry freshman, I raised my hand. And it was interesting as all of the others who were in the meeting looked around like, oh my goodness, like he's actually volunteering for this. And what I had actually signed up for was to be locked and sandbagged into the radio station to keep the station on broadcasting throughout the hurricane, because the station was a part of the emergency network in Coral Gables. And right. so the job was, you didn't power down when a hurricane came through. This was actually the time where the community was relying right. Even on a student-run station to give them critical information about the path of the storm, evacuation routes, and things like that. And so little did I know, I was volunteering to be locked and sandbagged into the station as a freshman. And that actually proved to be a pretty smart move, because shortly thereafter, I ended up getting elected to become general manager of that station and went on to do all sorts of wonderful things that really set me up for the career that I have today.
All right. So it's interesting. You talk about getting elected to be general manager of the station. Now, skip ahead to recently your career, did you ever imagine that you'd be elected to be chair of NPR?
No. I could not have even dreamed that that would happen. In fact, I remember actually being surprised when I was approached to join the board. And so I was even more surprised when I was asked to chair the board. And it was during a pretty tumultuous time in public media, although I would say I think all of media has been experiencing a tumultuous period here, prolonged period. But no, I could not have imagined that my career path would take me from that little small college radio station at the University of Miami to then sort of being the guy right next to the CEO as chairman of the board of NPR.
Right. And then that journey takes you here.
Yes.
To New York, which, you know, we talk about New York being the big stage, mm-hmm. but, you know, this is the largest public radio station and largest podcaster in the country. You know, a lot of your work and a lot of things we talk about in marketing are about engaging with customer and embracing a community. And radio stations, in particular public, are very much, as you've already kind of alluded to, about not just entertainment, but about impact. So recently, New York Public Radio celebrated its 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
So talk a bit about what New York radio, public radio, has meant to the community and continues to mean to the community here.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, I would say, you know, I feel extremely grateful and privileged to have the opportunity to lead this organization during this time of the centennial. And for most of WNYC's history, it was owned and operated by the city of New York, but has a storied history over the years of providing news and information, arts and culture, and even music to the people of New York. And I think it's significant because there's this enduring utility to radio that, you know, I'm proud to sort of be a part of. And oftentimes we think about radio and the news sometimes almost as kind of an insurance policy. It's like they're typically only like a handful of like big news days in a year. And you can think back and it's like, oh, you know, you have a 9/11, or, you know, you have a Hurricane Sandy, or you have, but when you think about that, it's like how you handle those few big news days in a year really determines where people go and who right. they rely on the other, you know, 360 days out of the year when, you know, things are not falling apart. And so to know that this station has been here for New Yorkers through 9/11, through Sandy, through you name it. And it's one of, we have a phenomenal archivist who's digitizing the archives of of WNYC and just the audio that we have going back, it's tremendous. So it means a lot to be here during this particular time.
So talk a little bit about voice. So one of the things that you've kind of led into is the rise of podcasting for conversations like this, you know, and podcasting has become a go-to tool for marketers. So give us a little bit of your thoughts on this moment in radio with the rise of podcasting and the impact that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Talk about, you know, boom and bust in some ways, but you know, voice is just really powerful, you know, and for those of us who sort of came up in the medium of radio, we describe it as theater of the mind, because it really is about using the voice and words to paint vivid pictures in the mind and in the sort of eyes of the listener. And it's really interesting to sort of be now in a period of, quite honestly, great disruption as it relates to broadcasts and media and audio, that both has, you know, opportunities and pitfalls, I would say, when you consider that WNYC in particular was really at the forefront of the podcast movement. And, you know, many of the folks who learned and developed the craft here have gone on out into the world and are producing and leading some of the most influential and important outfits in podcasting. And so that's something really, really special to be a part of. It's a renaissance of audio, and it is forcing, I think, organizations like New York Public Radio to think about how we now reinvent ourselves, being both a legacy broadcaster that is still seeking to serve audiences through sort of what we call the terrestrial broadcast waves, but also looking to meet audiences where they are and serve them on cell phones and smart speakers and, you know, computers, and really to bring that intimacy and that power of voice to whatever platform where our listeners may roam is really important. And there have been some real shifts in podcasting that have really sort of changed, I think, the trajectory of podcasting. But we're excited to be a part of, I think, the early sort of stages of that. And, you know, we're going to continue to find ways to push the state of the art and be a part of sort of what's next in audio and audio discovery.
When you think about that, any nods that you can give to our audience as to what they should be thinking about if they're thinking about getting into a podcasting space?
Wow. I would say it's a crowded space. And so one of the things you certainly want to be thinking about is, you know, what is your sort of where's your right to win? Like, where do you have a particular niche, a particular area where you can shine, where you can provide something that is of value? I think that is really important in an environment where we've gone from content being scarce to, you know, content being in abundance. And so part of the name of the game now is, you know, how do you sort of stand out in a crowded field? So I'm really thinking about that area of distinction, or that place where you really have a right to win.
So I'm going to take you back again to University of Miami.
Okay.
So any marketing lessons that you learned then that still hold true for you today?
Oh my goodness, lots of them. So where do I start? So, you know, marketing from a broadcast standpoint is hugely important. There's a quote that I love, and it's been attributed to a number of different people over the years. So I won't say who it comes from, but it says something along the lines of, without marketing or advertising, something terrible happens. Nothing. And I think that was one of the things that I learned back in those early university days, is that, one, as a broadcaster, you have to use all of the tools that you have to market both to people that are listening,
right,
so that you are increasing the number of occasions that they listen. You are increasing the amount of time that they spend with you. But in order to grow your audience, you actually have to, you can't sort of preach to the choir. You actually have to do outside marketing in order to induce sampling and to draw people in. And so I learned a lot in those early days about this symbiotic relationship between media and marketing, both what we do with our owned and operated platforms to sort of grow audiences and move audiences, but also how we ideally attract those audiences. And I guess one of the other big lessons that I learned, there's actually a bunch of them, but we've all heard the saying, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. You know, learning that it is that consistency of message. You have to sort of keep driving those messages. And I also learned that, when you're in it, you can get tired of it pretty quickly.
Right.
It's only until like you get absolutely tired of the marketing message to the forward promotion, whether it's, you name it, live and local, news and information, traffic and weather on the 8s or whatever it is, until you are absolutely tired of it, your audience probably hasn't even begun to sort of get that message, and it hasn't really begun to stick to them in a way that is going to move them forward the way that you want. So those are a few of the lessons that I learned.
So in the theme of lessons, I'm going to ask you this. So your son is just starting in his career.
Yeah.
So what are the lessons that you as LaFontaine, as dad, coalesce with you as LaFontaine as CEO that you're able to provide for him?
Wow, that's a good one. he would probably have some interesting answers for you if he was here. As you know, he is, finding his way quite a bit in the world of social media. And that has sort of really thrust him into a position where he's doing quite a bit of marketing and branding work. And I guess I would sort of back up from the beginning and start and say, my first real advice to him really was that, as a parent, I'm like, man, we've seeded so many things, in you. You have your entire life to go and play it safe and get a job and work for someone. Figure out what it is that you're passionate about and create your own reality. And so I'm really, just proud to see that he took that lesson and he's doing that. But then to sort of bring that forward, I think one of the messages that or lessons that I try to instill in him is change and the pace of change.
Right.
Whatever you think is the answer for today, count on it being different tomorrow. And so, get used to change. That is another lesson. And then I think the other thing I've been really trying to get him to understand is brand extensions. So right. You may be doing this right now, today. Think about all of the other ways you can branch and splinter that off into extensions of that brand to extend your career, extend your reach, extend your relevance. And that then becomes really valuable as you are interacting with brands.
Wow. That's really powerful in that. Do we think LJ's listening?
We'll make sure he gets to listen to this one.
Yes. But I love the conversation because you have an opportunity to mentor and lead with him, but you're also being reinforced and learning from his experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of an unexpected world of being a content creator and how that changes some of the norms that we studied and grew up with, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's really interesting now because, he spent, a bunch of years, watching me in the business, and now he is sort of translating that for folks his age and having quite a bit of success. In fact, to be completely honest, I mean, he's a part of the disruption that, we are feeling in, traditional in traditional legacy media. Right. You know, part of the challenge that I think a lot of us are experiencing right now is sort of the pullback in the ad market.
Right.
And a lot of that is attributed to the fact that, you know, they can go to content creators like my son and get 10 or 12 of them who have, you know, 1 million, 2 million followers, and they can actually, you know, with a reduced marketing spend, actually achieve some of the same things and be able to directly right. track some of that in ways that for us in traditional media, we are still trying to sort of figure out how to do that. So, yeah, it's really right. interesting. You know, in some ways, you know, I'm learning from him.
Right. So I asked the question, what's next for New York Public Radio?
Wow. I think what's next for New York Public Radio is a couple of things. One, when I look out at sort of the landscape, not just here in New York City, but in communities across the country, the crisis today is in local news and information, serving the local information needs of communities. And so what I think is next for New York Public Radio is figuring out even more how to meet those information needs, as we like to say, not only for New Yorkers, but for those with a New York state of mind, for the New Yorker in all of us. I think that's what's next. I think the other thing that's next is really trying to figure out how to develop more addressable one-to-one relationships so that we go from sort of this broad casting model, perhaps to something that feels more like narrow casting or connecting with individuals in ways that are going to create the stickiness that is going to ensure the financial support that has really sort of supported and undergirded public media stations like WNYC and New York Public Radio for years. Right. I think that's next. And then figuring out, as I said before, how do we push the state of the art and continue to be a leader in media for, you know, the big what's next for all of us.
Wow. I can't believe that we're at our time now.
I can't believe it either.
I know, but I'd be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity for you to get the final word for our podcast today. But I want you to close it out like you used to close out your overnight radio show. I think that's only fitting that I turn the mic completely over to you and you take us home, my friend.
Well, I wish I could remember exactly how I used to do that. But I guess if I have a moment to just say a parting word, it would be that, you know, the pace of change continues to speed up, I think, in as we think about the world of media and marketing and promotion and advertising. And I'm looking forward to continuing to listen to leaders like you and the leaders that you are bringing on this podcast, because that is one of the ways that I continue my lifelong learning and feel like I get a little bit of a leg up as I'm trying to look around the corner and figure out what's next for my organization and for my industry. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
And thank you. And thank you all for our first portion of our episode of AMA Marketing and Live from New York. Once again, I'm your host, Benny F. Johnson, AMA CEO. Thank you. All right. So we like to keep things really agile and flexible and dynamic. So LaFontaine Oliver, will you come back to the stage? So he remembered the sign off.
Yeah, see, he tripped me up asking me that question.
So we just heard the sign off, and only a handful of us heard it, but I think we all need to hear the sign off. So we're going to record this and punch this in as a bonus part of the episode.
So I'm going to corny sign off.
So it is, you know, here we are at the end of another AMA Marketing and Podcast, our episode. We're going to have LaFontaine Oliver close us out.
So my sign off was, yesterday's tomorrow will always end up today. So say what you mean and always mean what you say. I'm out.
And that's marketing.